sword against. And while the sword was embedded with jewels and filigree, it was large enough to be more than decoration. Perhaps it had something to do with those invisible things in the garden. Maybe he'd lost his eye and earned that scar in battle. I fought against a shudder. Alice had said the house was safe, but warned me to keep my wits about me. What might lurk beyond the house, or be able to use my human senses against me? Just how far would Tamlin's order not to harm me stretch? What kind of authority did he hold? Lucian paused, and I found him smirking at me, making the scar even more brutal. Were you admiring my sword, or just contemplating killing me, Feyre? Of course not, I said softly, and glanced at Tamlin. The gold flecks in his eyes glowed, even from the other end of the table. My heart beat at a gallop. Had he somehow heard me take the knife? The whisper of metal on wood? I forced myself to look again at Lucian. His lazy, vicious grin was still there. Act civilized, behave, possibly win him to my side. I could do that. Tamlin broke the silence.
Feyre likes to hunt.
I don't like to hunt. I should have probably used a more polite tone, but I went on. I hunt out of necessity. And how did you know that? Tamlin's stare was bald, assessing.
Why else were you in the woods that day? You had a bow and arrow in your house.
I wondered whether he'd almost said hovel.
When I saw your father's hands, I knew he wasn't the one using them.
He gestured to my scarred, calloused hands.
You told him about the rations and money from pelts. Fairies might be many things, but we're not stupid. Unless your ridiculous legends claim that about us, too.
Ridiculous. Insignificant. I stared at the crumbs of bread and swirls of remaining sauce on my golden plate. Had I been at home, I would have licked my plate clean, desperate for any extra bit of nourishment. And the plates? I could have bought a team of horses, a plow, and a field for just one of them. Disgusting. Lucian cleared his throat.
How old are you, anyway?
19. Pleasant, civilized. Lucian tisked.
So young and so grave, and a skilled killer already.
I tightened my hands into fists, the metal of my knife now warm against my skin. Docile, unthreatening, tame. I'd made my mother a promise and I'd keep it. Tamlin's looking after my family wasn't the same as my looking after them. That wild small dream could still come to pass. My sisters comfortably married off, and a lifetime with my father, with enough food for us both, and enough time to maybe paint a little, or to maybe learn what I wanted. It could still happen, in a faraway land, perhaps, if I ever got out of this bargain. I could still cling to that scrap of a dream, though these high fae would likely laugh at how typically human it was to think so small, to want so little. Yet any bit of information might help, and if I showed interest in them, perhaps they would warm to me. What was this but another trap in the woods? So I said, "So is this what you do with your lives? Spare humans from the treaty and have fine meals?" I gave a pointed glance toward Tamlin's baldric, the warrior's clothes, Lucian's sword. Lucian smirked.
We also dance with the spirits under the full moon and snatch human babes from their cradles to replace them with changelings.
Didn't? Tamlin interrupted, his deep voice surprisingly gentle.
Didn't your mother tell you anything about us?
I prodded the table with my forefinger, digging my short nails into the wood. My mother didn't have the time to tell me stories. I could reveal that part of my past, at least. Lucian, for once, didn't laugh. After a rather stilted pause, Tamlin asked,
"How did she die?"
When I lifted my brows, he added a bit more softly,
"I didn't see signs of an older woman in your house."
Predator or not, I didn't need his pity. But I said, "Typhus, when I was 8. I rose from my seat to leave.
"Feyre,"
Tamlin said, and I half turned, a muscle feathered in his cheek. Lucian glanced between us, that metal eye roving, but kept silent. Then Tamlin shook his head, the movement more animal than anything, and murmured,
"I'm sorry for your loss."
I tried to keep from grimacing as I turned on my heel and left. I didn't want or need his condolences. Not for my mother. Not when I hadn't missed her in years. Let Tamlin dismiss me as a rude, uncouth human not worth his careful watch. I'd be better off persuading Lucian to speak to Tamlin on my behalf. And soon, before any of the others whom they'd mention appeared, or this blight of theirs grew. Tomorrow. I'd speak to Lucian then. Test him out a bit. In my room, I found a small satchel in the armoire and filled it with a spare set of clothes, along with my stolen knife. It was a pitiful blade, but a piece of cutlery was better than nothing. Just in case I was ever allowed to go, and had to leave at a moment's notice. Just in case. Chapter 9. The following morning, as Alice and the other servant woman prepared my bath, I contemplated my plan. Tamlin had mentioned that he and Lucian had various duties, and aside from running into him in the house yesterday, I'd seen neither of them around. So, locating Lucian alone would be the first order of business. A casual question tossed in Alice's direction had her revealing that she believed Lucian was on border patrol today and would be at the stables, preparing to leave. I was halfway through the gardens, hurrying toward the outcropping of buildings I'd spied the day before, when Tamlin said from behind me,
"No tripwires today?"
I froze mid-step and looked over my shoulder. He was standing a few feet away. How had he crept up so silently on the gravel? Fairy stealth, no doubt. I willed calm into my veins, my head. I said as politely as I could, "You said I was safe here, so I listened." His eyes narrowed slightly, but he put on what I supposed was his attempt at a pleasant smile.
"My morning work was postponed," he said.
Indeed. His usual tunic was off, the baldric gone, and the sleeves of his white shirt had been rolled up to the elbows to reveal tanned forearms corded with muscle.
"If you want to ride across the grounds, if you're interested in your new residence, I can take you."
Again, that effort to be accommodating, even when every word seemed to pain him. Maybe he could eventually be swayed by Lucian. And until then, how much could I get away with if he was going to such lengths to make his people swear not to harm me, to shield me from the treaty? I smiled blandly and said, "I'd prefer to spend today alone, I think, but thank you for the offer." He tensed.
"What about—"
"No, thank you," I interrupted, marveling a bit at my own audacity. But I had to catch Lucian alone, had to feel him out. He might already be gone. Tamlin clenched his hands into fists, as if fighting against the claws itching to burst out. But he didn't reprimand me, didn't do anything other than prowl back into the house without another word. Soon enough, If I was lucky, Tamlin wouldn't be my problem anymore. I hurried for the stables, tucking away the information. Maybe one day, if I was ever released, if there was an ocean and years between us, I would think back and wonder why he'd bothered. I tried not to look too eager, too out of breath when I finally reached the pretty painted stables. It didn't surprise me that the stable boys all wore horse masks. For them, I felt a shred of pity at what the blight had done. The ridiculous masks they now had to wear until someone could figure out how to undo the magic binding them to their faces. But none of the stable hands even looked at me, either because I wasn't worth it or because they, too, resented me for the death of Andras. I didn't blame them. Any attempt at casualness took a stumble when I finally found Lucian astride a black gelding, grinning down at me with two white teeth.
Morning, Farah.
I tried to hide the stiffening in my shoulders, tried to smile a bit.
Going for a ride, or merely reconsidering Tam's offer to live with us?
I tried to recall the words I'd come up with earlier, the words to win him, but he laughed, and not pleasantly.
Come now. I'm to patrol the southern woods today, and I'm curious about the abilities you used to bring down my friend, whether accidental or not. It's been a while since I encountered a human, let alone a fey killer. Indulge me in a hunt.
Perfect. At least that part of this had gone well, even if it sounded as lovely as facing a bear in its den. So I stepped aside to let a stable boy pass. He moved with a fluid smoothness, like all of them here, and didn't look at me either. No indication at all of what he thought of having a fey killer in his stable. But my kind of hunting couldn't be done on horseback. Mine consisted of careful stalking and well-laid traps and snares. I didn't know how to give chase atop a horse. Lucian accepted a quiver of arrows from the returning stable boy with a nod of thanks. Lucian smiled in a way that didn't meet that metal eye, or the russet one.
No ash arrows today, unfortunately.
I clenched my jaw to keep a retort from slipping off my tongue. If he was forbidden from hurting me, I couldn't fathom why he would invite me along, save to mock me in whatever way he could. Perhaps he was truly that bored. Better for me. So I shrugged, looking as bored as I could. Well, I suppose I'm already dressed for a hunt.
Perfect, Lucian said, his metal eye gleaming in the sunlight slanting in through the open stable doors.
I prayed Tamlin wouldn't come prowling through them. Prayed he wouldn't decide to go for a ride on his own and catch us here.
Let's go then, I said, and Lucian motioned for them to prepare a horse. I leaned against a wooden wall as I waited, keeping an eye on the doorway for signs of Tamlin, and offered my own bland replies to Lucian's remarks about the weather. Mercifully, I was soon astride a white mare, riding with Lucian through the spring-shrouded woods beyond the gardens.
I kept a healthy distance from the fox-masked fairy on the broad path, hoping that eye of his couldn't see through the back of his head. The thought didn't sit well, and I shoved it away, along with the part of me that marveled at the way the sun illuminated the leaves and the clusters of crocuses that grew like flashes of vibrant purple against the brown and green. Those were things that weren't necessary to my plans, useless details that only blocked out everything else. The shape and slope of the path, what trees were good for climbing, sounds of nearby water sources, those things could help me survive if I ever needed to. But, like the rest of the grounds, the forest was utterly empty. No sign of fairies, nor any high fae wandering around. Just as well.
Well, you certainly have the quiet part of hunting down, Lucian said, falling back to ride beside me. Good. Let him come to me rather than me seeming too eager, too friendly. I adjusted the weight of the quiver strap across my chest, then ran a finger along the smooth curve of the yew bow in my lap. The bow was larger than the one I used at home, the arrows heavier and heads thicker. I would probably miss whatever target I found until I adjusted to the weight and balance of the bow. 5 years ago, I'd taken the very last of my father's coppers from our former fortune to purchase my bow and arrows. I'd since allotted a small sum every month for arrows and replacement strings.
Well? Lucian pressed. No game good enough for you to slaughter? We've passed plenty of squirrels and birds.
The canopy above cast shadows upon his fox mask, light and dark and gleaming metal. You seem to have enough food on your table that I don't need to add to it, especially when there's always plenty left over.
I doubted squirrel would be good enough for their table.
Lucian snorted but didn't say anything else as we passed beneath a flowering lilac, its purple cones drooping low enough to graze my cheek like cool, velvety fingers. The sweet, crisp scent lingered in my nose even as we rode on.
Not useful, I told myself, although the thick brush behind it would be a good hiding spot if I needed one.
You said you were an emissary for Tamlin, I ventured. Do emissaries usually patrol the grounds?
A casual, disinterested question.
Lucian clicked his tongue.
I'm Tamlin's emissary for formal uses, but this was Andrus's shift. So someone needed to fill in. It's an honor to do it.
I swallowed hard. Andrus had a place here, and friends here. He hadn't been just some nameless, faceless fairy. No doubt he was more missed than I was. I'm sorry, I said, and meant it. I didn't know what he meant to you all. Lucian shrugged.
Tamlin said as much, which was no doubt why he brought you here. Or maybe you looked so pathetic in those rags that he took pity on you.
I wouldn't have joined you if I'd known you would use this ride as an excuse to insult me. Alice had mentioned that Lucian could use someone who snapped back at him. Easy enough. Lucian smirked.
Apologies, Feyre.
I might have called him a liar for that apology had I not known he couldn't lie, which made the apology sincere? I couldn't sort it out.
So, he said, when are you going to start trying to persuade me to beseech Tamlin to find a way to free you from the treaty's rules?
I tried not to jolt. What?
That's why you agreed to come out here, isn't it? Why you wound up at the stables exactly as I was leaving?
He shot me a sideways glance with that russet eye of his.
Honestly, I'm impressed. And flattered you think I have that kind of sway with Tamlin.
I wouldn't reveal my hand. Not yet.
What are you talking?
His cocked head was answer enough. He chuckled and said,
Before you waste one of your precious few human breaths, let me explain two things to you. One, if I had my way, you'd be gone, so it wouldn't take much convincing on your part. Two, I can't have my way, because there is no alternative to what the treaty demands. There is no extra loophole.
But there has to be something.
I admire your balls, Feyre, I really do. Or maybe it's stupidity. But since Tam won't gut you, which was my first choice, you're stuck here. Unless you want to rough it on your own in Prithian, which, he looked me up and down, I'd advise against.
No, I couldn't just stay here forever until I died. Maybe there was some other way, or someone else who could find a way out.
I mastered my uneven breathing, shoving away the panicked, bleeding thoughts.
A valiant effort, Lucian said with a smirk.
I didn't bother hiding the glare I cut in his direction. We rode on in silence, and aside from a few birds and squirrels, I saw nothing, heard nothing. Unusual. After a few minutes, I'd quieted my riotous thoughts enough to say, "Where is the rest of Tamlin's court? They all fled this blight on magic?"
"How'd you know about the court?" he asked so quickly that I realized he thought I meant something else.
I kept my face blank. "Do normal estates have emissaries? And servants chatter? Isn't that why you made them wear the bird masks to that party?"
Lucian scowled, that scar stretching. "We each chose what to wear that night to honor Tamlin's shape-shifting gifts, the servants too. But now, if we had the choice, we'd peel them off with our bare hands," he said, tugging on his own. It didn't move.
"What happened to the magic to make it act that way?"
Lucian let out a harsh laugh. "Something was sent from the shitholes of hell," he said, then glanced around and swore. "I shouldn't have said that. If word got back to her..."
"Who?" The color had leached from his sun-kissed skin. He dragged a hand through his hair.
"Never mind. The less you know, the better. Tam might not find it troublesome to tell you about the blight, but I wouldn't put it past a human to sell the information to the highest bidder."
I bristled, but the few bits of information he'd released lay before me like glittering jewels. A her who scared Lucian enough to make him worry, to make him afraid someone might be listening, spying, monitoring his behavior, even out here. I studied the shadows between the trees, but found nothing. Prithian was ruled by 7 High Lords. Perhaps this she was whoever governed this territory. If not a High Lord, then a High Lady, if that was even possible. "How old are you?" I asked, hoping he'd keep divulging some more useful information. It was better than knowing nothing.
"Old," he said.
He scanned the brush, but I had a feeling his darting eyes weren't looking for game. His shoulders were too tense.
"What sort of powers do you have? Can you shapeshift like Tamlin?"
He sighed, looking skyward before he studied me warily, that metal eye narrowing with unnerving focus.
"Trying to figure out my weaknesses so you can..."
I glowered at him.
"Fine. No, I can't shapeshift. Only Tam can."
"But your friend, he appeared as a wolf. Unless that was his..."
"No, no. Andrus was high fae too. Tam can shift us into other shapes if need be. He saves it for his sentries only, though. When Andrus went across the wall, Tam changed him into a wolf so he wouldn't be spotted as a fairy, though his size was probably indication enough."
A shudder went down my spine, violent enough that I didn't acknowledge the red-hot glare Lucian lobbed my way. I didn't have the nerve to ask if Tamlin could change me into another shape.
"Anyway," Lucian went on, "the High Fae don't have specific powers the way the lesser fairies do. I don't have a natural-born affinity, if that's what you're asking. I don't clean everything in sight or lure mortals to a watery death or grant you answers to whatever questions you might have if you trap me. We just exist to rule."
I turned in the other direction so he couldn't see as I rolled my eyes. "I suppose if I were one of you, I'd be one of the fairies, not High Fae? A lesser fairy like Alice, waiting on you hand and foot?" He didn't reply, which amounted to a yes. With that arrogance, no wonder Lucian found my presence as a replacement for his friend to be abhorrent. And since he would probably loathe me forever,
Since he'd ended my scheming before it had even begun, I asked, "How'd you get that scar?"
"I didn't keep my mouth shut when I should have and was punished for it."
"Tamlin did that to you?"
"Cauldron, no. He wasn't there. But he got me the replacement afterward."
More answers that weren't answers. So there are fairies who will actually answer any question if you trap them? Maybe they'd know how to free me from the treaty's terms.
"Yes," he said tightly, "the Suriel. But they're old and wicked, and not worth the danger of going out to find them. And if you're stupid enough to keep looking so intrigued, I'm going to become rather suspicious and tell Tam to put you under house arrest. Though I suppose you would deserve it if you were indeed stupid enough to seek one out."
They had to lurk nearby then if he was this concerned. Lucian whipped his head to the right, listening, his eye whirring softly. The hair on my neck stood, and I had my bow drawn in a heartbeat, pointing in the direction Lucian stared.
"Put your bow down," he whispered, his voice low and rough. "Put your damned bow down, human, and look straight ahead."
I did as he said, the hair on my arms rising as something rustled in the brush.
"Don't react," Lucian said, forcing his gaze ahead too, the metal eye going still and silent. "No matter what you feel or see, don't react. Don't look. Just stare ahead."
I started trembling, gripping the reins in my sweaty hands. I might have wondered if this was some kind of horrible joke, but Lucian's face had gone so very, very pale. Our horses' ears flattened against their heads, but they continued walking, as if they'd also understood Lucian's command. And then I felt it. Chapter 10. My blood froze as a creeping, leeching cold lurched by. I couldn't see anything, just a vague shimmering in the corner of my vision, but my horse stiffened beneath me. I willed my face into blankness. Even the balmy spring woods seemed to recoil, to wither and freeze. The cold thing whispered past, circling. I could see nothing, but I could feel it. And in the back of my mind, an ancient, hollow voice whispered, "I will grind your bones between my claws. I will drink your marrow. I will feast on your flesh. I am what you fear. I am what you dread. Look at me. Look at me." I tried to swallow, but my throat had closed up. I kept my eyes on the trees, on the canopy, on anything but the cold mass circling us again and again. "Look at me." I wanted to look. I needed to see what it was. "Look at me." I stared at the coarse trunk of a distant elm, thinking of pleasant things, like hot bread and full bellies. "I will fill my belly with you. I will devour you. Look at me." A starry, unclouded night sky, peaceful and glittering and endless. Summer sunrise. A refreshing bath in a forest pool. Meetings with Isaac. Losing myself for an hour or two in his body, in our shared breaths. It was all around us, so cold that my teeth chattered. "Look at me." I stared and stared at that ever-nearing tree trunk, not daring to blink. My eyes strained, filling with tears, and I let them fall, refusing to acknowledge the thing that lurked around us. "Look at me." And just as I thought I would give in, when my eyes hurt so much from not looking, the cold disappeared into the brush, leaving a trail of still recoiling plants behind it.
Only after Lucian exhaled and our horses shook their heads did I dare sag in my seat. Even the crocuses seemed to straighten again.
What was that? I asked, brushing the tears from my face.
Lucian's face was still pale.
You don't want to know.
Please. Was it that Suriel you mentioned?
Lucian's russet eye was dark as he answered hoarsely,
No. It was a creature that should not be in these lands. We call it the bog. You cannot hunt it, and you cannot kill it, even with your beloved ash arrows.
Why can't I look at it?
Because when you look at it, when you acknowledge it, that's when it becomes real. That's when it can kill you.
A shiver spider-walked down my spine. This was the Prithian I'd expected. The creatures that made humans speak of them in hushed tones even now. The reason I hadn't hesitated, not for a heartbeat, when I'd considered the possibility of that wolf being a fairy.
I heard its voice in my head. It told me to look.
Lucian rolled his shoulders.
Well, thank the cauldron that you didn't. Cleaning up that mess would have ruined the rest of my day.
He gave me a wan smile. I didn't return it.
I still heard the bog's voice whispering between the leaves, calling to me.
After an hour of meandering through the trees, hardly speaking to each other, I'd stopped trembling enough to turn to him. So, you're old, I said, and you carry around a sword and go on border patrol. Did you fight in the war? Fine. Perhaps I hadn't quite let go of my curiosity about his eye. He winced.
Shit, Feyre, I'm not that old.
Are you a warrior, though?
Would you be able to kill me if it ever came to that?
Lucian huffed a laugh.
Not as good as Tam, but I know how to handle my weapons.
He patted the hilt of his sword.
Would you like me to teach you how to wield a blade? Or do you already know how, oh mighty mortal huntress? If you took down Andrus, you probably don't need to learn anything. Only where to aim, right?
He tapped on his chest. I don't know how to use a sword. I only know how to hunt.
Same thing, isn't it?
For me, it's different. Lucian fell silent, considering.
I suppose you humans are such hateful cowards that you would have wet yourself, curled up and waited to die if you'd known beyond a doubt what Andrus truly was.
Insufferable. Lucian sighed as he looked me over.
Do you ever stop being so serious and dull?
Do you ever stop being such a prick? I snapped back. Dead. Really, truly, I should have been dead for that. But Lucian grinned at me.
Much better.
Alice, it seemed, had not been wrong. Whatever tentative truce we built that afternoon vanished at the dinner table. Tamlin was lounging in his usual seat, a long claw out and circling his goblet. It paused on the lip as soon as I entered, Lucian on my heels. His green eyes pinned me to the spot. Right. I'd brushed him off that morning, claiming I wanted to be alone. Tamlin slowly looked at Lucian, whose face had turned grave.
We went on a hunt, Lucian said.
I heard, Tamlin said roughly, glancing between us as we took our seats.
And did you have fun?
Slowly, his claw sank back into his flesh. Lucian didn't answer, leaving it to me.
Coward.
I cleared my throat. Sort of, I said.
Did you catch anything?
Every word was clipped out.
No.
Lucian gave me a pointed cough, as if urging me to say more. But I had nothing to say.
Tamlin stared at me for a long moment, then dug into his food, not all that interested in talking to me either. Then Lucian quietly said, "Tam." Tamlin looked up, more animal than Fay in those green eyes, a demand for whatever it was Lucian had to say. Lucian's throat bobbed.
"The bog was in the forest today."
The fork in Tamlin's hand folded in on itself. He said with lethal calm,
"You ran into it?"
Lucian nodded.
"It moved past, but came close. It must have snuck through the border."
Metal groaned as Tamlin's claws punched out, obliterating the fork. He rose to his feet with a powerful, brutal movement. I tried not to tremble at the contained fury, at how his canines seemed to lengthen as he said,
"Where in the forest?"
Lucian told him. Tamlin threw a glance in my direction before stalking out of the room and shutting the door behind him with unnerving gentleness. Lucian loosed a breath, pushing away his half-eaten food and rubbing at his temples.
"Where is he going?" I asked, staring toward the door.
"To hunt the bog."
"You said it couldn't be killed, that you can't face it."
"Tam can."
My breath caught a bit.
The gruff, high fey, half-heartedly flattering me, was capable of killing a thing like the bog. And yet, he'd served me himself that first night, offered me life rather than death. I'd known he was lethal, that he was a warrior of sorts, but...
"So he went to hunt the bog where we were earlier today?"
Lucian shrugged.
"If he's going to pick up a trail, it would be there."
I had no idea how anyone could face that immortal horror, but it wasn't my problem. And just because Lucian wasn't going to eat anymore didn't mean I wouldn't. Lucian, lost in thought, didn't even notice the feast I downed. I returned to my room, and, awake, with nothing else to do, began monitoring the garden beyond for any signs of Tamlin's return. He didn't come back. I sharpened the knife I'd hidden away on a bit of stone I'd taken from the garden. An hour passed, and still Tamlin didn't return. The moon showed her face, casting the garden below in silver and shadow. Ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous to watch for his return, to see if he could indeed survive against the bog. I turned from the window, about to drag myself into bed. But something moved out in the garden. I lunged for the curtains beside the window, not wanting to be caught waiting for him, and peered out. Not Tamlin, but someone lurked by the hedges, facing the house, looking toward me. Male, hunched, and... The breath went out of me as the fairy hobbled closer, just 2 steps into the light leaking from the house. Not a fairy, but a man. My father.
Chapter 11. I didn't give myself a chance to panic, to doubt, to do anything but wish I had stolen some food from my breakfast table as I layered on tunic after tunic and bundled myself in a cloak, stuffing the knife I'd stolen into my boot. The extra clothes in the satchel would just be a burden to carry. My father had come to take me, to save me. Whatever benefits Tamlin had given him upon my departure couldn't be too tempting then. Maybe he had a ship prepared to take us far, far away. Maybe he had somehow sold the cottage and gotten enough money to set us up in a new place, a new continent. My father, my crippled, broken father, had come. A quick survey of the ground beneath my window revealed no one outside, and the silent house told me no one had spotted my father yet. He was still waiting by the hedge, now beckoning to me. At least Tamlin had not returned. With a final glance at my room, listening for anyone approaching from the hall, I grasped the nearby trellis of wisteria and eased down the building. I winced at the crunch of gravel beneath my boots, but my father was already moving toward the outer gates, limping along with his cane. How had he even gotten here? There had to be horses nearby then. He was hardly wearing enough clothing for the winter that would await us once we crossed the wall, but I'd layered on so much that I could spare him some items if need be. Keeping my movements light and silent, carefully avoiding the light of the moon, I hurried after my father. He moved with surprising swiftness toward the darkened hedges and the gate beyond. Only a few hall candles were burning inside the house. I didn't dare breathe too loudly, didn't dare call for my father as he limped toward the gate. If we left now, if he indeed had horses, we could be halfway home by the time they realized I was gone. Then we'd flee. Flee Tamlin, flee the blight that could soon invade our lands. My father reached the gates. They were already open, the dark forest beyond beckoning. He must have hidden the horses deeper in. He turned toward me, that familiar face drawn and tight, those brown eyes clear for once, and beckoned. "Hurry, hurry!" Every movement of his hand seemed to shout. My heart was a raging beat in my chest, in my throat. Only a few feet now, to him, to freedom, to a new life. A massive hand wrapped around my arm.
"Going somewhere?"
Shit, shit, shit.
Tamlin's claws poked through my layers of clothing as I looked up at him in unabashed terror. I didn't dare move, not as his lips thinned and the muscles in his jaw quivered, not as he opened his mouth and I glimpsed fangs, long, throat-tearing fangs shining in the moonlight. He was going to kill me right there and then kill my father. No more loopholes, no more flattery. No more mercy. He didn't care anymore. I was as good as dead.
"Please," I breathed. "My father..."
"Your father?"
He lifted his stare to the gates behind me, and his growl rumbled through me as he bared his teeth.
"Why don't you look again?"
He released me. I staggered back a step, whirling, sucking in a breath to tell my father to run, but he wasn't there. Only a pale bow and a quiver of pale arrows remained, propped up against the trees. Mountain ash. They hadn't been there moments before. They rippled, as if they were nothing but water, and then the bow and quiver became a large pack, laden with supplies. Another ripple, and there were my sisters, huddled together, weeping. My knees buckled.
"What is?"
I didn't finish the question. My father now stood there, still hunched and beckoning. A flawless rendering.
"Weren't you warned to keep your wits about you?" Tamlin snapped. "That your human senses would betray you?"
He stepped beyond me and let out a snarl so vicious that whatever the thing was by the gates shimmered with light and darted out as fast as lightning streaking through the dark.
"Fool," he said to me, turning. "If you're ever going to run away, at least do it in the daytime."
He stared me down, and the fangs slowly retracted. The claws remained.
"There are worse things than the bog prowling these woods at night. That thing at the gates isn't one of them, and it still would have taken a good long while devouring you."
Somehow my mouth began working again,
And of all the things to say, I blurted, "Can you blame me? My crippled father appears beneath my window and you think I'm not going to run for him? Do you actually think I'd gladly stay here forever, even if you'd taken care of my family, all for some treaty that had nothing to do with me and allows your kind to slaughter humans as you see fit?"
He flexed his fingers as if trying to get the claws back in, but they remained out, ready to slice through flesh and bone.
"What do you want, Feyre?"
"I want to go home."
"Home to what, exactly? You'd prefer that miserable human existence to this?"
"I made a promise," I said, my breathing ragged, "to my mother when she died, that I'd look after my family, that I'd take care of them. All I have done every single day, every hour, has been for that vow. And just because I was hunting to save my family, to put food in their bellies, I'm now forced to break it."
He stalked toward the house, and I gave him a wide berth before falling into step behind him. His claws slowly, slowly retracted. He didn't look at me as he said,
"You are not breaking your vow. You are fulfilling it and then some by staying here. Your family is better cared for now than they were when you were there."
Those chipped, miscolored paintings inside the cottage flashed in my vision. Perhaps they would forget who had even painted them in the first place. Insignificant. That's what all those years I'd given them would be, as insignificant as I was to these high fae. And that dream I'd had of one day living with my father with enough food and money and paint, it had been my dream, no one else's. I rubbed at my chest.
"I can't just give up on it, on them, no matter what you say."
Even if I had been a fool, a stupid human fool, to believe my father would ever actually come for me. Tamlin eyed me sidelong.
"You're not giving up on them."
"Living in luxury? Stuffing myself with food? How is that not—"
"They are cared for. They are fed and comfortable."
Fed and comfortable. If he couldn't lie, if it was true then it was beyond anything I'd ever dared hope for. Then, my vow to my mother was fulfilled. It stunned me enough that I didn't say anything for a moment as we walked. My life was now owned by the treaty, but perhaps I'd been freed in another sort of way. We neared the sweeping stairs that led into the manor, and I finally asked, "Lucien goes on border patrol, and you've mentioned other sentries, yet I've never seen one here. Where are they all?"
"At the border," he said,
as if that were a suitable answer. Then he added,
"We don't need sentries if I'm here."
Because he was deadly enough. I tried not to think about it, but still I asked, "Were you trained as a warrior then?"
"Yes."
When I didn't reply, he added,
"I spent most of my life in my father's warband on the borders, training as a warrior to one day serve him, or others. Running these lands was not supposed to fall to me."
The flatness with which he said it told me enough about how he felt about his current title, about why the presence of his silver-tongued friend was necessary. But it was too personal, too demanding to ask what had occurred to change his circumstances so greatly. So I cleared my throat and said, "What manner of fairies prowl the woods beyond this gate, if the bog isn't the worst of them? What was that thing?" What I'd meant to ask was, what would have tormented and then eaten me? Who are you to be so powerful that they pose no threat to you? He paused on the bottom step, waiting for me to catch up.
"A puka. They use your own desires to lure you to some remote place. Then they eat you. Slowly. It probably smelled your human scent in the woods and followed it to the house.
I shivered and didn't bother to hide it. Tamlin went on.
These lands used to be well guarded. The deadlier fairies were contained within the borders of their native territories, monitored by the local fey lords or driven into hiding. Creatures like the Pooka never would have dared set foot here. But now, the sickness that infected Prithian has weakened the wards that kept them out.
A long pause, like the words were choked out of him.
Things are different now. It's not safe to travel alone at night, especially if you're human.
Because humans were defenseless as babes compared to natural-born predators like Lucian and Tamlin, who didn't need weapons to hunt. I glanced at his hands but found no trace of the claws, only tanned, calloused skin. What else is different now? I asked, trailing him up the marble front steps. He didn't stop this time, didn't even look over his shoulder to see me, as he said.
Everything.
So I truly was to live there forever. As much as I longed to ensure that Tamlin's word about caring for my family was true, as much as his claim that I was taking better care of my family by staying away, even if I was truly fulfilling that vow to my mother by staying in Prithian, without the weight of that promise, I was left hollow and empty. Over the next 3 days, I found myself joining Lucian on Andrus's old patrol while Tamlin hunted the grounds for the bog, unseen by us. Despite being an occasional bastard, Lucian didn't seem to mind my company, and he did most of the talking, which was fine. It left me to brood over the consequences of firing a single arrow. An arrow. I never fired a single one during those 3 days we rode along the border. That very morning, I'd spied a red doe in a glen and aimed out of instinct, my arrow poised to fly right into her eye as Lucian sneered that she was not a fairy, at least. But I'd stared at her, fat and healthy and content, and then slackened the bow, replaced the arrow in my quiver, and let the doe wander on. I never saw Tamlin around the manor, off hunting the bog day and night, Lucian informed me. Even at dinner, he spoke little before leaving early, off to continue his hunt night after night. I didn't mind his absence. It was a relief, if anything. On the third night after my encounter with the Pooka, I'd scarcely sat down before Tamlin got up, giving an excuse about not wanting to waste hunting time. Lucian and I stared after him for a moment. What I could see of Lucian's face was pale and tight. You worry about him, I said. Lucian slumped in his seat, wholly undignified for a fey lord.
Tamlin gets into moods.
He doesn't want your help hunting the bog?
He prefers being alone, and having the bog on our lands, I don't suppose you'd understand. The Pooka are minor enough not to bother him, but even after he's shredded the bog, he'll brood over it.
And there's no one who can help him at all?
He would probably shred them for disobeying his order to stay away.
A brush of ice slithered across my nape. He would be that brutal? Lucian studied the wine in his goblet.
You don't hold on to power by being everyone's friend. And among the fairies, lesser and high fae alike, a firm hand is needed. We're too powerful and too bored with immortality to be checked by anything else.
It seemed like a cold, lonely position to have, especially when you didn't particularly want it. I wasn't sure why it bothered me so much.
The snow was falling, thick and merciless, already up to my knees as I pulled the bowstring back, farther and farther, until my arm trembled. Behind me, a shadow lurked. No, watched. I didn't dare turn to look at it, to see who might be within that shadow, observing, not as the wolf stared at me across the clearing. Just staring, as if waiting, as if daring me to fire the ash arrow. No. No, I didn't want to do it. Not this time, not again. Not. But I had no control over my fingers, absolutely none, and he was still staring as I fired. One shot straight through that golden eye. A plume of blood splattering the snow, a thud of a heavy body, a sigh of wind. No! It wasn't a wolf that hit the snow. No, it was a man, tall and well-formed. No, not a man. A high fae with those pointed ears. I blinked, and then my hands were warm and sticky with blood. Then his body was red and skinless, steaming in the cold, and it was his skin that I held in my hands, and I threw myself awake, sweat slipping down my back, and forced myself to breathe, to open my eyes and note each detail of the night-dark bedroom. Real. This was real. But I could still see that high fae male face down in the snow, my arrow through his eye, red and bloody all over from where I'd cut and peeled off his skin. Bile stung my throat. Not real. Just a dream. Even if what I'd done to Andras, even as a wolf, was. I scrubbed at my face. Perhaps it was the quiet, the hollowness of the past few days. Perhaps it was only that I no longer had to think hour to hour about how to keep my family alive, but it was regret and maybe shame that coated my tongue, my bones. I shuddered as if I could fling it off and kicked back the sheets to rise from the bed. Chapter 12. I couldn't entirely shake the horror, the gore of my dream as I walked down the dark halls of the manor, the servants and Lucien long since asleep. But I had to do something, anything after that nightmare, if only to avoid sleeping. A bit of paper in one hand and a pen gripped in the other, I carefully traced my steps, noting the windows and doors and exits, occasionally jotting down vague sketches and X's on the parchment. It was the best I could do, and to any literate human, my markings would have made no sense. But I couldn't write or read more than my basic letters, and my makeshift map was better than nothing. If I were to remain here, it was essential to know the best hiding places, the easiest way out, should things ever go badly for me. I couldn't entirely let go of the instinct. It was too dim to admire any of the paintings lining the walls, and I didn't dare risk a candle. These past 3 days, there had been servants in the halls when I'd worked up the nerve to look at the art, and the part of me that spoke with Nesta's voice had laughed at the idea of an ignorant human trying to admire fairy art. Some other time, then, I'd told myself. I would find another day, a quiet hour when no one was around to look at them. I had plenty of hours now, a whole lifetime in front of me. Perhaps I'd figure out what I wished to do with it. I crept down the main staircase, moonlight flooding the black and white tiles of the entrance hall. I reached the bottom, my bare feet silent on the cold tiles, and listened.
Nothing. No one.
I set my little map on the foyer table and drew a few X's and circles to signify the doors, the windows, the marble stairs of the front hall.